Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and a forlorn JJ Devaney. How are you, brother?
I'm okay. I'm all right.
Okay. I don't believe any of that, but we'll have time to have you lay down on the couch here and old Papa Bear will take you through.
The chaise longue. By the way, is it appropriate for someone who would be my psychiatrist to call himself Papa Bear?
Isn't that what they do? That's always been my experience. Look, people tweeted me after the game, and there was some sentiment that because Bale did what he did, that I was claiming some victory over you. Somebody even suggested that it should count in the caught offside cup.
Yeah, I laughed at that one.
Look, here's the thing. I when Bale did that, it was one of those SBY moments, a scream by yourself. Like, yeah. You're watching alone and just like, oh, my God. And I certainly did. It was incredible. But I take no joy, and you're one of my closest friends. I take no joy in seeing you so down about this. It was a crushing loss.
You text me straight after the game, and you were just very sad for me. And I replied that I'm glad you didn't adopt the Eagles road trip stance.
A buddy of mine, Berenson, who often tweets and texts us.
Good guy.
Yeah, but he after Karius gave up the third goal, he texted me, and then in quotes, as if it was something that I would be saying, he wrote, "How's your Liverpool road trip now?"
Oh, man.
I said, uh-uh. I said, I'm not going to do that. I'll only mention it on the podcast.
While we're on the subject, in the hours after that defeat in Kiev, our listeners were fantastic by and large. They were very nice. You can tell that they genuinely just love the sport, really, despite the teams that they've adopted. They are very good about it, and they felt sorry for me, and they commiserated. And then those that didn't went big, and it was kind of funny. There was one guy who he hashtagged Loserpool. And then speculated on how much money I spent to get there. And then he enlarged my Twitter avatar. This is the face of a man who's just spent all that money to see his team get beaten.
What did he guess financially?
Oh, he didn't. He guessed a month's wage or something like that.
Uh-oh. Because I am silently curious as to what you did spend, but I'm not going to ask.
There was a lot of money dropped. Let's put it that way, between the ticket and the plane ride.
Well, I felt very bad for you. I view you almost like a father figure in my life, and or an uncle. And it's very hard.
Again, your Freudian analysis is going the wrong direction.
Well, before we get into the game, I mean, look, you went to Ukraine. I was with my family this weekend, and when I went, I kind of broke off from this barbecue we were having to go watch the game, and you know, as a way of trying to explain to everybody how big this is, I was like, look, JJ is actually in Kiev right now. Like, this is not just some game.
Yes, he was.
So can you, like, tell us about it. Was it cool? How was the food? Were the bars good? Did you meet cool people?
The people are absolutely unbelievable. And even the ones with only the most minimal amount of English will try and help you. They really are a beautiful people. And to the point where there was a guy in who was driving one of the cabs I was in, and he wanted to talk to me about what he did, his job in Kiev, and tell me about the city. He's actually works the job and is trying to get into the government to try and improve the city and make things better. The city is so beautiful. I can't tell you. I had this negative image of Eastern Bloc kind of drabness. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it gets grey in the winter. But I'm just driving. We finished our podcast in the cab, and I'm driving along the Dnieper, and it's just gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. The weather was perfect, really perfect. I know it got hot and was probably hot for the players, but for the ordinary day tripper, tourist, football fan, perfect. The food actually was pretty much standard Western fare. I expected a little bit more.
I was going to ask, what is Ukrainian food?
There's like this really hearty beef soup, which I didn't get to experience. They have their mozzarella sticks with a kind of a raspberry jam, which I found interesting and tasty. The beer is really good. And again, I said the people are beautiful, and they were so kind. But I'll tell you, the layout of the city and the beautiful place where my hostel was, I had like a balcony in my hostel. It was gorgeous, looking out on cobblestone streets.
And you're like Rapunzel.
Cobblestone streets, and up the hill, this kind of very, how would we say it, Eastern European architecture, just gazing over me. Amazing statues from another time. I would go there to go there.
Yeah.
Never mind football. And I was quite impressed by the Olympic Stadium, which was, I mean, I had a perfect view. The seats were amazing. Look, I had a fantastic time. And the game was the game.
The game happened. Let's go through it. I mean, you know it's a serious game. Look what I have here from watching the game on vacation. Pages of notes, minute by minute.
I'm all going from up here.
Of things that went down. I'm obviously not going to read all of it, but it's a good
reference.
Please don't. We will go through it chronologically, though. I feel like that's the... And then we can break off as like we get to crucial moments that happen in the game. Overall, I don't mean to just breeze through the first 30 minutes or so, but dominant is strong, but... Like, that was Liverpool's game, the first third of that game. That was clearly controlled, I thought, by Liverpool.
Yeah, I thought Liverpool were on top in it. And remember I said how I valued as a measure of Liverpool dominance in the game the kind of turnovers they'd be able to produce from open play. From 0 to 15 minutes in the game, they had 6. And that was a crucial period. They seemed to be on top. Trent Alexander-Arnold had that shot, which was at the opposite goal to me. So imagine I'm looking at, I thought that was going in. It was going in. It was a brilliant save by Keylor Navas, as it turned out. And I couldn't have been much more happy with the start, Andrew. Honestly, I thought there was good energy, good pressing against a top quality side. And you're right, a solid start.
Sadio Mane was so good in the first 30 minutes. Down the left side, he was just giving Carvajal and Real Madrid fits. It seemed like he was controlling that game. He was really the better performer, I thought, even than Salah over the early part there. And look, I wrote here, this is in the 12th minute, I wrote Madrid trying to find... You may remember that there was just a period of the game where Madrid were like, all right, we got to stop this. Mm. And they were in midfield, and it was just horizontal pass. It felt like Jose Mourinho had come down to the sidelines
and taken
control.
Trying to get a foothold in the game and not give away that kind of dangerous turnover.
Yeah. And I wrote fans getting restless. I mean, you started to hear the whistles. I don't know if that was from Real Madrid booing their own side at how they were just, you know... But it was a thing
I can
they
tell
had
you Liverpool fans gave them plenty.
I'm sure they did. But it did feel like it was a thing that Real Madrid had to do because I wrote in the 14th minute, Liverpool applying more pressure, it feels like something's coming. It just felt like that goal, it was kind of one of those like any minute now, this is the breakthrough is going to occur. That, like you said, the Keylor Navas save happened, which by the way wasn't just a great save, but the fact that he allowed no rebound either. I mean, it was so impressive.
Yeah, a keeper who's, let's be honest, dramatically underrated, and we'll get to how that kind of performance from Navas or that kind of save from Navas made me wonder about our own number one.
And then we get to the 25th minute when Mo Salah falls hard on his shoulder, and I wrote here, uh-oh. Now, he did come back in, and then 4 minutes later, he went down, and right away you knew, okay, well, that's...
He was writhing in pain in the first... in the first moment of when he went over. And you knew, from our vantage point, it was so hard to tell exactly the nature of the injury. I was worried the way he was in visible pain that it might have been a knee or something, but it was not.
No, from what I saw on TV, obviously, is a much different... I was afraid, he just broke his collarbone. Like, I started to think, not even about what this meant for this game. I was like, well, that's his World Cup done.
Yeah.
Which is just so cruel. Now, hopefully it won't be. He was seen earlier today not wearing a sling, which has to be viewed as a really good sign.
Yeah, walking kind of freely, so we might be looking at some serious sprain rather than a tear.
And the Egyptian FA has come out and they said that the time frame of this injury is, imagine that, just coincidentally, it ends perfectly with the start of the World Cup. It's always interesting when that happens.
But there was another report from the Liverpool physio in one of the tabloid newspapers in England that he would miss maybe the first two games of group play, which would be, I mean, catastrophic.
Let's use this, though, as an opportunity to talk not about him, but about Sergio Ramos, because there's been he's been in the crosshairs over the last 72 hours or so. So I'm going to give you three choices here, and I want to see if you are able to pinpoint which of these applies for Sergio Ramos. A, he's a dirty player. B, he's a dirty player that I'd love to have on my team. And C, he didn't do anything wrong. And now, with this, lump in not just what he did with the Mo Salah incident, but then also let's bring in what happened early in the second half when he clearly elbows Lloris Karius in the head.
I'm not sure I entirely feel that your choices sum up exactly what he is. There's a word for what he is. Do you want? You can beep stuff right now. We're in a good position to beep stuff, right?
You can just curse like there's no tomorrow, yeah.
He's a complete house. And that's what he is. But that's what he always has been. And if you look at the clips that have been floating around lately, look what he did, I believe, at Wembley with Moussa Dembele, trying to get him involved in some stuff. He is, as we used to say on this podcast all the time, the finest purveyor of the dark arts you'll ever find. I'll go for B, though. I'll play the game, Andrew. Mm-hmm. He's a dirty player, but I'd love to have him on my team because he's an absolute winner. Now, here's what happened. And it was interesting. I would implore people to read Graham Hunter's piece where he breaks down the contentious points of this game.
Yeah, I read that piece.
You didn't like it.
No, I thought that, look, I get his sentiment, and I'll give him some leeway on the Mo Salah incident because, yes, does he drag Salah to the ground? I think he does, but he's not trying. I don't think he's trying to injure him. I think he's trying to ensure, like Graham Hunter says, that there's no break that occurs going
because
the other way.
There was a break on.
Right.
By the way, the initial tackle where he wins the ball, he uses his body between Salah and the ball, and that's a good touch on. He gets a good touch on the ball, but he locks. He interlocks with Salah, and he's making sure. He's making sure that there's no way Salah gets up and initiates anything if that touch wasn't strong enough.
Right.
That's what happened. He did not deliberately try to injure him. That was just a bonus,
and
actually.
I agreed with all that from Graham Hunter's piece when he kind of absolves Ramos in that incident. But I thought the way he spoke about the elbow to Karius's head, does Van Dijk give a little bit of a shove? Sure. But the way Graham Hunter says, oh, and does Ramos maybe put out his elbow? Perhaps he does.
You could make that argument.
Well, that's it.
No.
He doesn't need to do that. It's like blaming Abraham Lincoln for sitting in those seats in the Ford Theater. I mean, come on. It's like you're completely blaming the wrong person in this situation. No, he puts out an elbow. It should have probably been a red card. Why is there even... I mean, the Champions League brings in this extra official to be on the line. No one sees that. Isn't that why the guy is there?
Graham was being extremely disingenuous there. Virgil van Dijk makes a strange movement which propels Ramos towards Karius. But on his way, Ramos realizes, I can leave one in here.
Yeah.
I can leave one on the goalkeeper. Now, as
there was nothing accidental about what happened.
No, it was opportunism. Right, Van Dijk makes him go towards there, but once he's on his way, Ramos is like, "Let me see what I can do
I'm
here.
Get my money's worth on this."
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid like that's part of some of the great players. Here's where I have to recuse myself as a Liverpool fan. For years, during our glory years, during the first four European Cup triumphs, we had players like Graham Souness, Andrew, who they left a bit in on you. Leaving a bit in is classic hard man football behaviour and happens for time immemorium. It has happened. And I even do it, like in games I play myself, like if there's a ball going out over the sideline in the early stages of a game, and you know you're going to win the tackle, but you might follow in through a little bit. You leave a little bit on and let the guy know you're there. That kind of tactics. It's the murky grey area that we don't like to talk about. Because of Twitter outrage now, we jump on one guy. I'm upset. I think Ramos is, as I said before, I won't repeat it so you don't have to beep it, but that's what I feel he is. But he's a great player.
Here's the only issue that I take with what you're saying. I agree with your general sentiment that there is a place in this sport for what you love to refer to as the dark arts. I agree. There's a place for it. My only problem with it is this. Now, when Ramos does that, he can't know that it's not going to be seen. For all he knows, there's an extra official who's on the goal line, who's standing right near me. He's got to be thinking, if I do something here, they'll see this. And yet he still puts out his elbow early in the second half and elbows the keeper in the head.
If
anyone sees it, it's a red card, and now his team's playing 40 minutes a man down. I mean, that's brainless.
No.
Dark arts all you want, but that is dumb. And he got very lucky and was very fortunate that he got away with it.
Now, we spoke about the classic hood that ended last season with the aforementioned Graham Hunter, in which Sergio Ramos acted like he did before and received a red card.
Yeah.
He has this track record, and he's been caught quite a few times in doing what can only be described as on the edge, over the line stuff. So this is who he is.
Yep, I guess you're right. There's a place for him, but he's living on the edge constantly.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into this whole thing about petitions and such stupidity.
Oh, yeah.
Like, to me, that is just
This happens in sports.
It does happen in sports.
Petition that results be changed or things.
Yeah.
It's just
And his dark art on Salah was to stop him being in any part of a breakaway, which would have left Liverpool 4-2, I believe, in the move. So there you go.
Yeah, flying under the radar with the Salah injury then, because that's gotten so much attention, was Danny Carvajal then going off with an injury of his own to his leg, which also is on the edge. Spain are going to take him still, it seems, to the World Cup. But again, he's on the edge. And this is a guy who, after a deep run in the Champions League in 2016, was forced out of Spain's squad for the European Championship. So he's had some really tough break with injuries, and you could see it on his face and Salah's face. And I thought John Strong made a really good point. I think it was after the Carvajal injury when he said, you obviously didn't hear this because you were there, but he said, essentially, we live in a really cynical time when all we think is that these players are motivated by money and, you know, endorsement deals and things like that, and fashion, and that the football is secondary. But in these moments, when you see Mo Salah and Danny Carvajal in tears on the field, whether it be because they're coming out of a final early or because they're thinking about the World Cup that they may miss, that is all football. I mean, that is entirely two guys who are just devastated that they are not going to be able to play the game that they've trained for and that they love so much in the biggest moments of their careers.
When you hear these guys on Champions League magazine say, my greatest dream to play in the World Cup has been with me since I was a child. That's obviously banal, but it is one of the truer things you'll ever hear.
Yeah.
It's so close as well. When you're in like the end of May, you can touch it, you can taste it. And that emotion is genuine and real. Their minds must, in the moment of that pain where they know something's wrong, their minds must just fast forward to that terrible vista that they won't be there.
Yeah. The first half ends, and it ended with a bit of a flurry. As you would expect, the Salah injury happened and Real Madrid started to take control. They had an opportunity right before the end of the half where Karius made a phenomenal save on Ronaldo. Benzema scored, but neither one would have counted. I believe both players were offsides. How'd you feel at the end of the half? The half ended, too, with Nacho getting a chance, great ball from Toni Kroos to Nacho. He put it into the side netting. It felt like both teams probably felt fortunate that it was 0-0 at the half.
Yeah, I actually felt okay at halftime, but that was not a view shared by my fellow Scousers. There was a genuine deflation out of the Liverpool balloon with the Salah injury. It was so tangible. Now, they didn't stop singing, they didn't stop cheering, they didn't stop whistling, booing, the whole thing. But, like, on the way, I tell you, one of the great barometers at a live sporting event is a trip to the bathroom with your fellow fans. And the bathroom chat was not positive. Because, Andrew, and here's the thing, you have Lallana come into the game, and what football has he played?
I believe I heard a stat at ESPN FC that this game in which he came on for Salah was the fourth time in the last 5 months that he's played more than 30 minutes in a game?
That would sound about correct.
I might even be overstating how many times it's been. The point is, he hasn't done this in a really long time consistently.
No, it's a month ago since we saw pictures of him in some holiday resort with a fan taking pictures with him because he was not involved. He was trying to rehab his injury, and he did not seem confident that he would be involved in the latter stages of the season.
Yeah.
And you look at, again, I don't want to go back to the stats, but if you look at the drop-off in the pressing until the very end of the game where Liverpool were chasing, I know we're doing this chronologically, I'm just saying that Salah's removal structurally changed the team, and there was an energy drop-off. And I could feel it, but I was still optimistic. I really was optimistic. It's 0-0, and it's a final. There's so much to be played for. And I remember 2005. I remember the way things were at halftime. I'll take that 0-0 all day long.
Well, yeah. You know? 2005 is a bit of an outlier.
I was still buzzing. I got to be honest with you. No, that was, like I said, that was not the majority view amongst Liverpool fans in the Olympic Stadium, but I was buzzing. That's the truth.
Well, good. And then the second half started, and it started with a bang as a Lallana error led to Isco drilling the crossbar. And then just shortly after that, I believe 3 minutes after that incident, it happened. Goal for Real Madrid. They got on the board first on a really, really bizarre. I wonder if you even realized what it was that happened.
We were looking around. We were looking for a flag. We were looking for anything. But I got to say, even at that distance, it was clear. The ball was way far gone. Now, you'll remember an incident in years ago, 1970s, it's always replayed, of George Best. Windsor Park, England are playing. And Gordon Banks is bouncing the ball on the edge of his square, going to kick it out. And as he lofts it to punt it, Best sticks his foot and flicks it over and scores.
Yeah.
That's an obvious infringement in my view, because he's trying to kick the ball. It's on the kick out. This was nothing like that. The ball has gone such a distance. And honestly, Benzema's read it. He's seen him do it every single time he's received possession in the first half. And he's just chanced it. I'm going to stick a foot in here. I'll see what happens.
I almost feel, and look, I say this as a guy who hasn't played goalkeeper. I don't really know. I can't tell you the ins and outs of what it. I can only tell you from my perspective as a fan watching that happen. Karius is getting crushed for it. And rightfully so. It was unnecessary to try to throw the ball out as quickly as he did. He could have faked the throw. Benzema, you know, it didn't need to happen the way that it did. But I don't know about you. I really feel like Karim Benzema is not getting enough credit for what he did there. I don't think that's quite as easy as he made that look.
Now, he has been the master in the latter stages of this Champions League of pouncing on goalkeeping errors. Look what happened against Bayern Munich, which he followed it up. He kept going. It's that striker's instinct, I guess. I think you're right. It's a howler, though, Andrew. You know,
of course it is.
I mean, as much credit as you want to give Benzema for reading that, Karius, I don't understand it. In what coaching manual did he read this? And he is desperately, one of the most desperate scenes of the night was him flailing around, looking for a flag, looking for a referee's whistle, and then admonishing the fullback for not being, the Liverpool fullback or whoever he was trying to throw the ball to, for not being further out in position to receive it, that the angle was wrong or something.
But there was no...
Oh my God. I'll tell you, the silence in the Liverpool end, which unfortunately wasn't the only time we were going to hear silence for the rest of the evening.
There were.
And then the building, because the Real Madrid fans weren't sure what had happened. And there was this building roar, and the minute they saw the referee signal to the halfway line, there was just this explosion.
Yeah.
And
one other note on that goal before we move off of it, and Karim Benzema specifically. Did you know only three players have scored more Champions League goals in history than Karim Benzema? He's one of the most underappreciated players of this era.
I read that stat, and he's a guy who's come under fire this season because he's only scored 12 goals. And I think, well, there's been some high-profile people like Gary Lineker who, after Champions League games, have put underrated question mark when they're talking about Benzema. But his record is there to be seen.
It is.
It's incredible.
You can name the three, right?
Ahead of him.
Yeah.
Ronaldo.
Uh-huh, he's the most.
Messi.
Yeah.
Well, who am I missing out on? Go on, Tony.
Raul.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, more than Van Nistelrooy.
Van Nistelrooy springs to mind as well as another player. I mean, if you were to say who's had the better career right now, stop. Don't think about anything in terms of goal scoring. You would just guess that it was Ruud van Nistelrooy.
I agree, yeah.
But not so.
No. Didier Deschamps shows so much resolve in continuing to leave Benzema off of France.
That feels like a long legacy from an ugly incident.
Of course, it is. But like to continue to do it, like, he's not at the Euros, not going to be at this World Cup, and this guy, he could really help them.
Yeah, he really could.
Man. But we continue through the Champions League here. Credit to Liverpool because maybe the fans were hanging their heads, maybe players were, but you know, they got an opportunity, a ball was floated in, just kind of was deflected over Firmino's head. It looked like he could have scored. They get the corner kick, and then right on the ensuing corner, I was glad that Sadio Mane got the goal because I thought that even when before Salah, after Salah, he continued to play like nothing had changed, and he deserved it. He deserved to get that goal, and what an incredible lift that had to be to everybody in wearing red in that stadium.
And it was even better. It was at our end, so the whole place just erupted. The flares went off, the smoke bombs. Everything. That might be one of the greatest moments of my life.
Wow.
Encapsulated in
Let's
those...
Let's rank them. Birth, obviously, is one.
Well, yeah, but I didn't have anything to do with that.
But none of this happens without birth.
Yeah, okay, fine. But I suppose down the line, people will ask me, you know, your marriage, your birth of your kid, whatever.
Yeah, but those things haven't happened yet. So
no, they haven't. So this is
all you
there.
Have is sports.
Don't do this. I'm fragile right now. No, it was absolutely... It just lifted the crowd. And it came off a set piece, and it seemed to me... obvious this is how to get at them, but Liverpool didn't do enough of that. Well, I'll get onto that.
Okay, fair enough. Now, here comes the big difference in the game. We mentioned Salah getting hurt and Adam Lallana coming on. Meanwhile, Real Madrid has the ability to bring on Gareth Bale, and he was on for 122 seconds, and then he did this.
Marcelo, he's got three to pick out. It's the spectacular! It's Gareth Bale! Wonderful goal. Sensational from Gareth Bale. Ronaldo's done it for Real in the Champions League this season. And in the final, It's the Welsh international Gareth Bale.
And I don't bring that up to... That's not meant as a slight on Adam Lallana. It's only meant to reinforce just how difficult it is to beat Real Madrid, because no other club in the world is doing that.
But it compares the benches too, and just the paucity of options. I was discussing with a fellow scouser beside me, well, what if we had to make another change up front? It's not happening for Bobby Firmino. He's like, well, Dominic Solanke. Like, it's, and that's no disrespect to him. That's, it's just we are so thin. But the goal, let's focus on the goal. Mm-hmm. Again, the silence. We were like, he hasn't done it, has he? I was like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. That is truly unbelievable. And I actually didn't think it was that good of a cross. It seemed further behind him than the Ronaldo cross, less intentional than the Ronaldo goal against Juventus. Just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. He's caught that and put it somewhere. Carrius simply can't get to it. Unbelievable athleticism.
I just have such respect for these guys that even think to try. You know, like most guys, I think either let that go or try to get like a chest to it or something. But these guys that even think, I can do this. There's I'm going to give this a go.
There's been a lot of honesty from some old pros who have been talking about the game on BBC, ITV over the last few days. And they've all said, I wouldn't even have attempted it. I wouldn't even have thought. I would have let it go and see, could I get a knock-on from someone else? Or...
Right, because you're right. That ball, Marcelo, he'll get credit for the assist.
It's not bad. Don't get me wrong.
It was about as far behind someone as a ball like that can be on a goal like that, with it still being possible to score.
He looked like he was stretching every fiber, every sinew to get to it, and then to get so much on it. That was a wonderful goal. It really was.
Can you, are you in a position to rank, like, where that falls? People are comparing it to the goal Zidane scored.
Yeah.
And people are also comparing it to the most forgotten goal in Champions League history, the goal that Mandzukic scored last season for Juventus.
Right. Well, yeah, I suppose we should.
I'm putting Bale at the top. I'm not trying to be prisoner of the moment.
I love the Mandzukic goal because of the whole flow.
The build-up.
But I'm going to take that out of the reckoning because it wasn't involved in a winning team. Ah. So you're saying the most unforgettable goals you'll ever see. You asked me the best. What's the best goal I've seen in a final? So
go beyond just Champions League.
So I'm gonna. This is how I've done it.
Yeah.
I've started off. I said FA Cup, Gerrard versus West Ham, the volley from like way out, 40 yards.
You believe that was better than what Bale did?
No. I'm saying up until the Bale goal. I still don't know where I am on the Bale goal yet, because I love the Zidane goal against Leverkusen.
All right.
Obviously in the Champions League, Zidane against Leverkusen, Lars Ricken for Dortmund in 97. He comes off the bench with his first touch and lobs the goalkeeper from a little way inside the half. That was pretty special. And two forgotten goals because it was such a trouncing. But when Milan beat Barcelona in Athens in 94, Savicevic and Desailly scored two wonderful individual goals. One a volley, one a curler. And internationally, Van Basten's volley against the Soviet Union in 88. Those are the goals that come to mind. But that is the rich kind of company that Mr. Bale finds himself in. I still wonder, Zidane's. I mean, Zidane's isn't as acrobatic in one sense. Maybe I will go with Bale. I'll go with Bale for now, because I was there.
It was sensational. And then over the next 20 minutes, I mean, it's still, what you have to remember is, it's still just a one-goal game.
Oh, I remember.
And it seemed to me like momentum kind of seesawed. The first 5 minutes after that goal, it felt like Liverpool were truly deflated. We had come back once. How are we going to do this again without our talisman and Salah out there? But they did bounce back, and then once again, it was Sadio Mane. He hits the post.
Oh.
I mean, that's one of those moments that you'll replay that one in your mind over and over again.
I can still see it hit the post. I thought it was in, Andrew, on the way. When it left his boot, I thought it was in. I was ready to go nuts.
Yeah. But by the same token, Liverpool, you know, I give them credit. They did what they had to do when you're trailing in a final. They're pushing guys forward. They're trying to find that equalizer, and they were left exposed in the back. And you saw, I mean, Van Dijk, on one attempt by Ronaldo, he looked so cool and calm in defense. And then Robertson made one of the plays of the game. If Liverpool go on and equalize or whatever, we'll look back on Robertson's tackle.
100%. That would have been ranked up there with Jamie Carragher again in 2005, or the save from Shevchenko by Jerzy Dudek. All those moments, one of the great tackles. And also, just to go back to the stats again, because I think it's important from the turnover point of view, when Liverpool were kind of chasing 75 minutes to the end, they had 8 turnovers from open play, which goes to show that's so crucial to what they do. And I guess if you have a guy like Lallana in the team, or a midfield that's not where it's not quite happening for Henderson and Milner, you're going to struggle.
Yeah. 73rd minute, there was a shout for a handball on Casemiro. Did you think it was? I did not. I've just kind of been conditioned to believe that nothing is a handball in the box.
I honestly can't recall.
Well, a thing happened where it kind of hit his arm, but...
It would have been on the other end of the field. I can't recall it, and I haven't been able to look back on the full game. I've just been looking at highlights because it's too painful.
Yeah. And then another thing happened, and it was Gareth Bale just kind of... Let me test this keeper here. And Karius just... He gets it so wrong, and it was so hard to watch. You're looking at his face afterwards, and you're just because you know. You know that he just experienced the thing that he'll never live down. And
I don't see.
It was sad. It was pretty sad.
Again, someone I follow on Twitter, Ken Early, asked the question. And I want to put it to you. Do you remember a bigger kind of meltdown performance in a major game like this?
Well, look, I always. When we're talking about goalkeepers, I always go back to Rob Green in the opener for England against the US.
But it was early. It was recoverable.
But still, his first moment of a World Cup was to allow a ball go through his legs for an equalizer.
I know,
goal.
But I'm not just keepers, just cast the net generally.
A meltdown in a big moment?
Not a big moment. He had two meltdowns. He was poor. He was poor. In a Champions League final, I just can't remember. Like, loads of players don't show up. Even Zidane had a few finals where...
Well, I was about to reference his headbutt in the World Cup final as kind of a moment that a great player would be ashamed of.
Right, but I'm just thinking play, general play. Even in American sports.
Well, I mean, I think one just happened last night in Houston with the Rockets going 7 of 44 from three-point range. But that was historic. They missed 27 straight.
I mean,
that was a team effort.
That was terrible.
Yeah, people will look at John Starks with what he did in the Knicks in Game 7. In the 94. When he was, 1 of 18 or 0 of 18 from the field in Game 7 of the NBA. That's kind of... Yeah.
Somebody pointed one out from a college basketball game. It was Michigan, and the player forgot...
Chris Webber. He called a timeout with none left. That's a good one. You know, people will look at kickers. Scott Norwood missing a field goal for the Bills against the Giants. Karius, he now goes... You're right. He goes into the Norwood, Webber, Starks category of guys who just... themselves in just the biggest moments possible. And it's just, you know.
I mean, Andrew, that's catchable. And if,
of course it is. And if or at least you at least punch it clear.
Or bat it down to yourself and catch it.
Yeah.
When that went in, I...
Oh, it's game, set, match.
It's that was the lowest point.
There was no coming back from that.
No.
Which was worse of his two mistakes?
I suppose the second one, really.
I agree.
Because it's so standard. But the first one was such an aberration, too.
It was.
But at least I can give somebody some credit for some invention.
Benzema had to do something. Bale was just... I mean, okay, maybe it dipped a little. Somebody was trying to compare it earlier to the shot that Christian Eriksen took against Caballero against Chelsea.
Yeah, they shouldn't have done that.
I said, nah, I don't know. I said,
it's not working for me.
Eriksen's may have nicked the underside of the bar. Caballero at least had to jump. This was, I don't know. Look, and even in the best of circumstances, Karius, like, when a ball is shot at him and he punches it, don't you feel like he's always punching it back into traffic? Like, I feel like he's just, even when he's good, he's not really that good.
I need your help here.
Yeah.
So, when Mignolet had that howler against Arsenal in the 3-3, where Xhaka hits it down the middle and it swerves and he goes at it a strange way.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he signed his death warrant in terms of the rest of the season. He was out. And Karius was in. But you know me. I have been consistent on this. I don't think either of them are good enough.
No, everyone has said that.
I don't think everyone has. I think there was a lot of talk leading up into, maybe not into this game, but certainly prior to the second leg in Rome, how Karius had improved so much over the last few months. But I just hadn't seen it. Like you said, basic saves in Rome, going back into traffic. He just doesn't inspire confidence. And he obviously doesn't inspire it in himself because...
No, he's just a guy. Like, he's not a special keeper. He's not...
Just a guy in the Champions League final, though.
Sometimes the moment...
And I am.
Isn't it funny how the moment has a way of finding the guys who are just not up for it? Like, there's no... You know, sometimes you can hide if you're not up for it, but if you're a goalkeeper, you can't. And it'll find you. And it found him twice. And he'll...
I don't see him playing in the Champions League again.
Do you see him playing for Liverpool again?
I do not.
I don't either.
No.
I don't either. It was tough to watch, man. I'll have more thoughts on that later in this podcast.
Okay.
But a few final thoughts on this game. Worst loss for you in your life?
Well, I don't know, because it feels so unlike the other losses. The late defeat to United in the Cup Final in 96, because I was so young, it just hurt, and it was a late goal, 1-0. And the same in 99 in the Cup, when they beat us 2-1 when we were leading 1-0 in Old Trafford. It's the worst loss because it's a lot. I've said this, I would have sooner been hammered 4-0, Ronaldo hat-trick, Bale late header, than just throw it away.
You'll always be left wondering, well, what if, yeah, with this one? Salah getting hurt. What if we had a keeper who was just bad rather than, like, historically bad? You know, like you say, Mane hit the post. Now, Isco did hit the bar for them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sure.
But still, I mean, there was just so many what-if moments.
Our lack of domination in the center of the park, you know, maybe lends me to believe that later on in the game, maybe in extra time even, Real Madrid would have gone on and done what Real Madrid traditionally do. But we made it completely easy for them, and we handed it to them through the errors and the unfortunate injury, and that leaves just such a chasm.
Like, it's Real Madrid. They don't need your help, you know? They're good enough, and for Liverpool to help them and yet still be in it. Oh, man.
It's a weird chasm that's left. It's an emptiness. It's not really sadness. It's just...
Are you finding this therapeutic, talking it through? We're reliving it, but we're talking about it.
You've been very kind. You've handled me with kid gloves. I'm telling you, Dr. Sigmund Freud, you better watch out.
I'm coming for you. Afterwards, Bale and, I guess more notably, Ronaldo both hinted at leaving.
Mm.
Which one to you is actually more likely to leave?
Bale seems like he's done. I think the moment that he was not on that team sheet after 5 goals in 4 games leading into the final, and me and you speculating in a taxi cab in Kiev together that he was definitely going to start.
Yeah, I was shocked.
I wasn't shocked, because I did say to you, I just don't feel anymore that he's a guaranteed starter despite how good he's been.
But form should never matter more than heading into a cup final.
I agree with you, but it's weird. I think, though, to give Ronaldo, Zidane his credit, what a way to find a way to make him central and yet not start him. What a way to make sure Isco plays and yet you can still find a place for Gareth Bale to create magic. But it's not enough. It's not enough. He says he needs to be starting regularly. I don't see it happening. He's moving, Andrew.
He's too good. He's just too good to not be a first
team
player.
The only reason he doesn't move is because turns 29 in the summer, he's 28 now, he's at his peak. There, as you and I both know, there's a limited number of places he can go.
Yeah, well, I saw it ruled out already that he will not be returning to Spurs.
It would seem an unlevy move, wouldn't it?
Yes, but...
It would have to be at a marked discount, right?
Presumably. I mean, I can't see any other way.
I think the major issue for him is, can he stay fit consistently for over a long period of time? I mean, he had that period at the start of the season and mid-season where he was injured.
Yeah, here's the interesting thing. Bale's issue is football-related. Ronaldo's issue, I don't know what it is. Now, here's Gab Marcotti talking about Ronaldo and whatever his unclear issue is with his situation at Real Madrid.
The worst thing that can happen to Real Madrid, if you care about Real Madrid, and you know, and he's put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into Real Madrid, if you've got something to say, come out and say it and be clear about what it is. All right, you've said it's not about money. What is it about? Is it about your position on the pitch? Is it about respect? What is it that you don't like? Ideally, in the normal world, in the grown-up world, you would send George Mendes, or you sit down yourself and you would speak to Zidane or Florentino or whoever you would speak to. Now, maybe they've done that and we don't know about it, and he feels the need to go public. But if you're going to go public all the way. If the problem is not money, and it's not that you want to raise because you think that you should be making as much money in his name out of Messi, then come out and say what the problem is.
He doesn't say what the problem is, and that's when speculation sets in. Well, does he have a problem with the manager? Does he have a problem with the chairman? Does he have a problem with his teammates?
Is it a fiduciary concern?
Right. I mean, but seriously, we don't know. And now, look, I've got to believe that it's money, because he's been the face of a team that's now won 4 of the last 5 Champions League titles and 3 of the last 3. And he's making half of what Messi makes. He's making significantly less than what Neymar makes. He's basically making exactly, or maybe even less than what Ezequiel Lavezzi makes. And I think even Oscar, too. Now, China, it's a whole other situation. But nevertheless, he must see that, and I'm sure he's aware of that. So if he came out and said, this is yeah, I believe that my contract, I'm outperforming it, and I would like to sit down with Real Madrid. I'm sure we'd knock him because we'd say, oh, you've got all the money in the world. What's your problem? But ultimately, I think people would understand that more so than whatever is going on now. I really don't know what his problem could be if it's not money.
It is frustrating that he wouldn't just say, look, I feel as if I'm undervalued somehow at this club. And the only way you could really say that is that it's monetarily. He doesn't feel like he's getting whatever he wants. I would argue that in his years, he probably is at probably the right amount of money. But just tell us.
I think he's 20 million a year.
Tell us. Just give us a hint there.
21 and Messi's at 40.
I don't know.
Now, there's one other variable here, and it's one that he didn't mention, and it's one that he probably will not mention. And he'll just talk with those who are in his inner circle.
Yeah.
Ronaldo is a prominent athlete who is not Spanish, who's playing in Spain, which of course means that he's involved in a tax investigation.
Yeah.
Now I'm reading this. This is from an article in March, so a couple months ago, not that long ago. And it says here, this is from ESPNFC, El Mundo reported that Ronaldo's camp offered a, quote, blank check to the tax authorities in exchange for dropping criminal charges and the withdrawal of a potential custodial prison sentence. And AS reported the tax authorities had rejected a settlement offer of 3.8 million euros from Ronaldo's advisors, as officials are demanding a total of 25.7 million euros in back taxes and fines. Should the case go forward to trial, and should Ronaldo continue to protest his innocence and refuse to settle with authorities, he could be found guilty and face a custodial prison sentence of 2 to 6 years.
Well, I mean,
now that I'm sure will not happen. Just like Messi got his suspended sentence. But I have a feeling that Ronaldo right now is talking with this is based purely on my own head. This is not on anything that I've heard or read. This is just what I think. 25.7 million euros. He's probably saying, okay, if they want me to pay that, I'm willing to pay it. But Real Madrid, how are you going to help me out? What are you going to do to my contract to make this right?
But we had all this last summer as well. This has been rumbling on now for some time. I thought it was closer a resolution than this.
Well, that article was from March.
So it's
maybe something's happened since.
Not that we've heard of. We haven't. I haven't anyway. Yeah. You could be right. That would make sense at least. I mean, the Spanish tax laws must be some kind of convoluted. How are these guys who are just so infinitely rich from so many different revenue streams not capable of getting this right? Who is advising them?
I don't know. Last but not least on this, like I just mentioned, 4 and 5 years for Real Madrid, 3 of the last 3, Champions League. I mean, this is widely considered, if you win this, you're the best team in the world.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way about this era and Real Madrid?
I mean, if you look at the run to the final alone and don't think about how they played, you'd say, wow, absolutely, 100%. But there's an emptiness because of a lack of domestic domination, mm-hmm. like absolute domination that makes you think, I don't know, I'm not ready. I don't know where I fall on this. This is an exceptional achievement. Yet you look at it, you've got a team that is not heralded, generally speaking, outside of their absolute star player, and a manager who probably doesn't get the plaudits for what he's done, considering he's won more than such luminaries as Sir Alex Ferguson, Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on it in saying that it has to do with their domestic success. I mean, in the last 5 years, they have as many La Liga titles as Atletico Madrid do.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, obviously Barcelona are what they are. Barcelona have the other 3. I don't know. It's weird. Like, if you told me a team was going to win 4 of 5 Champions Leagues, like, if this were Barcelona that had this kind of success, I'd say this era is Barcelona and no one's close. Real Madrid have done it, and for some reason, I'm with you. I don't know that I can, like, so easily anoint them. You have to. You're left with no choice. But I don't go into every Champions League campaign saying, well, there's Real Madrid and there's everybody else.
No, they're clearly brilliant because of what they've done, but they don't have the same aura as teams of the past that have done. I mean, there's very few that have done something similar, but they just don't seem to command that. It's interesting. I think I have a guy who we can talk to about this next week.
Oh.
We might get into this and see. I got a guy.
Okay. Well, there it is, my friend. That is our look at the Champions League. What a campaign it was. I think even with losing the way that you lost, Liverpool, there's news today that they are planning on signing Fabinho.
It's done.
You say it's done. It's done?
It's done.
It's done.
Oh, done. In shirt, on way to Liverpool with family. signed, sealed, delivered yesterday. While I was grilling a Memorial Day burger, they got it done.
Picture posted on Twitter?
Picture posted on Twitter.
See, now that means it's done.
Video posted on Twitter kissing Crest.
So it's actually done.
Oh, it's done like that burger I made yesterday.
I mean, you have to feel generally good about the trajectory of this club.
I do, of course. I feel good about that. I feel good. I mean, we didn't have time to get into it, but I feel good that this midfield is going to be revamped. It needs to happen. And I think you add Keita into the mix. A lot of rumours about Fekir along with Fabinho then.
So who's leaving? I mean, Emre Can is probably on his way out.
He's on his way. Yeah, and I think we may be calling time on a few others, or a few others are just going to have to accept more time on the bench.
Well, I'll tell you what. All these guys that are going to be looking for new jobs, you know what they could use? ZipRecruiter.
Ah.
We got to get Lars Karius an account. If he goes to ziprecruiter.com/offside, he can sign up.
Too soon, bro.
Is it? So if you're hiring, every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. Like, who's Lars Karius? He'll put his resume out there right now. I mean, what at this point, where's he shopping? MLS? Is that where we're at?
Oh, my God.
I went there.
League on.
ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. They learn what you're looking for, they identify people with the right experience, and they invite them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Now, here's how you do it. Right now, listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, it's free. Just go to ziprecruiter.com/offside. That's ziprecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. I wonder what Karius's resume would look like right now.
I think you'd say...
What would be... You know how everybody puts on their resume things like, you know, the flowery wording, like, I helped facilitate the movement of papers from one room to...
Right.
Like, Karius, I facilitated movement of the ball.
To Karim Benzema? I don't know. I mean, yeah. It sounds impressive out of context, and then when you realize exactly how that was achieved.
Yeah
so, I don't know. Champions League goalkeeper with experience of long run to final.
Participated
in final of Champions League. I'm searching for a positive here.
No.
insured, vibrant and thrilling experience for one set of fans.
Just, you know what? It's nice though to see you laughing and smiling about all this.
Look, I mean, I feel for the guy. I really do.
Of course.
I'll tell you, the worst thing for him is the fact that there is no game next week. There is nothing to get the teeth into, to get sunk into, to try and put this behind him. Imagine all summer long.
Quickly here, we got to congratulate Fulham because they are back. They are back.
America's team.
They won 1-0. Here's how it sounded thanks to John Champion.
Sessegnon. Lovely ball. Chance. Goal. It's the captain, Tom Kearney, and Fulham lead in the race for that Premier League place.
I'm so intrigued by them coming back to the Premier League because if they can keep some of these guys with the club... I know they didn't win automatic promotion, so you're led to believe that the two that finished above them are better than them. But I don't know. I look at them and I think that they're actually a really good team.
They were a whisker away from automatic promotion, and it was a defeat at St. Andrews, I believe, out of the blue. That little wobble towards the end of the season.
Their form to end the year was insane.
Yeah. They fell short a little bit with that result and that. I don't know. Obviously, I haven't seen as much of them as I would have liked to, but apparently they play the most scintillating football across the season in the Championship, which will be a welcome... Look, there's no sorrow at some of the teams that went down from the Premier League, Stoke and West Brom in particular. So it may be nice to have a kind of a reinvigoration of a... attractive Fulham team to come into the Premier League.
I know. And you know what else is nice? To see an American happy and smiling again. Here's Tim Ream on Sky Sports afterwards, if this was how he dreamt it.
No, it's even better. I don't know that you can describe what the feeling is right now and the emotions and the the release of just everything that's gone on this season and the second half of the season. And I mean, there's not many better feelings than this.
A lot did go on. There was turmoil behind the scenes with player selection. There was a clash between the manager, and then Shad Khan appointed his son's friend to help.
We covered that one.
Yeah, I mean, like, weird things were happening at that club. But in the end, they get through. And
because of an American, and maybe in spite of an American.
And I was wondering, feel free to just like cut me off right away if you think I'm getting too crazy. And sometimes I need you to help save me from myself. Do you think England should have considered Ryan Sessegnon for their roster, or at least as a standby?
Not that crazy.
Okay.
Not that crazy.
Because they've kind of pulled out of that bag of tricks before. I remember in 06 with Aaron Lennon and Theo Walcott.
Well, Lennon wasn't so much a bag of tricks compared to Walcott, who had never been seen in a senior appearance.
Yeah.
For anyone. Sven-Göran Eriksson picked him on videos of reserve games. That was truly shocking. Ryan Sessegnon had a way better kind of resume to put before Gareth Southgate. Not that shocking to me. I don't think you're crazy at all.
I'll be curious now if Fulham managed to hang on to Mitrovic.
The problem with Sessegnon is a big one for them, because they know they'll get a huge number for him as a young talent.
They're now saying, and they have to say this, that they want to keep him and that he wants to stay. He saw this through and he wants to at least go up with them.
So that means he stays till January?
But I do like that the transfer window, I can't say this enough, that the window ends before the season starts. So we'll know. We'll know day one at the start of the season who he'll be playing for.
That's good.
Yeah. Also, last night, speaking of Americans and joyous occasions, the U.S. on the underneath your favorite Commodore's Bridge defeated Bolivia by a score of 3-0. Look, take this for what it's worth. I'm not saying this to be like funny or ironic or anything. I am trying really hard to turn the page on everything that happened.
As are many other people.
And so if you're trying to do that, and if you manage to do that, I think that it's fine to watch last night's game and have enjoyed it. Because you saw a lot of fresh faces out there that played pretty well. Look, the competition was what it was. But this is what this whole thing is about now. Is about Tim Weah performing well, about Josh Sargent scoring goals, about clean sheets.
I thought it was the Tim Weah Cup by the first 15 minutes. Wow. No pressure. Incredible.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, though. I agree with you. There were some early touches, little flicks, tricks, balls into the channels from interplay between Pulisic, Sargent in particular, and Weah, and it was nice. Rubio Rubin on one side doing some nice things too.
I thought he was really good.
I thought he looks raw like the rest of them, obviously.
Yeah.
But this is like, take for example Sargent. This is a guy who has no senior appearance at professional level for anyone.
Yeah.
So this is really great.
And there's some guys too, you know, like Anthony Robinson, who's on loan from Everton at Bolton. The ball he played in for Tim Weah's goal, it was perfect.
Ball. Yeah,
you know,
and so, it was a nice finish.
So this is it now. Like, this is where you are learning about these new guys. These are now new guys that, like, I'll go back now and I will continue to follow Anthony Robinson the same way that we did a couple years ago with Pulisic at Dortmund. Like, this is kind of a fresh time where you're learning who the new team is. And this is all about trying to ensure that lost generation of U.S. players, like what we have currently, guys between the ages of, what, like 25 to 30, that can't happen again. And so I thought, if you were like me and you're just trying so hard to forget about the past, then last night was encouraging.
I thought this was a good one. I agree with you. And look, it's closer to that heavy, heavy page getting turned.
Yeah. Do you have a mailbag?
We do have a mailbag. @SoccerPod, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Philip Hammond, is it okay to call Ramos Voldemort? He's a master of the dark arts. Every final of the last 3 years, he has had his hand in some sorcery. Also, with there being so many players who have dual citizenship or heritage that allows them to play for other national setups, I was just wondering if you could choose a player who had eligibility to play for your home country but chose another. Who would you choose to be on your team, past, present, and future? I would just say, at the moment,
isn't Messi just the answer? Is he saying like anybody ever, or somebody that has?
If you could choose a player who had
eligibility
to play for your home country but chose another, who would be that
for the U.S.? Like, Giuseppe Rossi is always the one that comes to mind.
For Ireland lately, Harry Kane is the one that comes to mind, and I suppose 12, 13 years ago, Wayne Rooney. who was approached by the Football Association of Ireland.
By the way, Jack Grealish had a couple moments in that. Now, Fulham were really physical with
him. I heard that, yeah, that he was targeted.
Yeah, but he had a couple moments, one where he kind of slalomed through the defense and put a shot on net. Had it gone in, I mean, it would have been one of the goals of the season.
The bar is in pregame for the Champions League final. There was one Villa fan in there. Aww. One Villa fan, and they couldn't get the channel on for him.
Oh, it's even sadder.
Yeah.
What was he doing there?
I don't know.
Unless he just happens to live in Ukraine.
I think he told me that he lived there, and he was trying to access the game, but he was in the wrong place.
That's sad. What else you have?
Sam Green, after multiple hard mistakes in the final tonight, is it time for Liverpool to ditch Karius and bring in a top keeper?
Yes.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Thomas, I felt that Ramos' challenge on Salah was a dirty play. I know the guys in the Fox studio were calling it a physical play and all that, but Ramos is a player who should never be given the benefit of the doubt. And watching the replay, he twists his body while grasping his other arm to make it so Salah cannot brace his fall.
I actually think that's a good point. Mm. Why do people give him the benefit of the doubt when we know who he is now? And we have, like you said, for years, this is who he's been. So why are we saying, we don't know? Yes, we do. Yeah. It's what he does.
Still not a reason to start a petition, though.
No.
Tyler Frick finishes us up here in a very small mailbag.
Oh, it better be, because we're at an hour.
Oh, my God.
You better set those players to 1.5 times now.
The past 2 years have been a downhill slide from when I wrote to you guys about the Golden Generation. Tyler wrote in about the Noah Davis article that the Golden Generation had passed. Yeah. But I know it's Bolivia, but all that changed last night. I'm all aboard, full caps, the hype train for these young Americans. I was tired of seeing a national team full of players using walkers and wheelchairs, steady, trying to get around the pitch, being afraid to make a run forward and to go in to the ground on tackles. Watching Robinson make flying runs up the wing, McKennie crushing players in the midfield, and Sargent and Wales work up top gave me a lot of hope for 2022. This is a bold take, but the team we saw last night would have qualified in the Hex. They had an energy you haven't seen in a while from the US men's national team. How do you guys think the US should build up the team going forward? Exactly like this. Reinvigorate the team with youth. Should they forget anyone over the age of 28?
No. Not yet.
Can't do that. Keep up the banter and energy on the podcast. I always enjoy listening. I love the fact you're pumped, Tyler. I really do. But you need old heads in qualifying. You need old heads in Gold Cups. And that Bolivian team was, I mean, they were the ones that were tailgating at the Memorial Day barbecue before the game. They did not look interested.
Yeah.
As positive as everything else was, and it was positive, Bolivia were bad. So we'll steady on. We still need some old heads.
But he's echoing what I just said. Like, I think it's fine to feel the way that he and I and others that I've spoken to about it feel.
Yeah, because
that,
we want to feel joy again.
There was something exciting about seeing the future performing well. So I'm okay with that. And that's it. @SoSoccerPod on Twitter. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com.
And just a big thank you to all the listeners who contacted me over the weekend, who followed us on Twitter, the many and varied adventures. Thank you so much for the kind words in my hour of darkness. Although, it's football. It is not life or death.
Yeah, but you're in it, though. I mean, come on. Don't be one of those. It's just a game, guys. It's not to us. What to watch for? A couple international friendlies. Saturday, 3 p.m., Ireland and the United States. Are we counting this as a caught offside cup?
I don't know. Should we?
No, I don't think we should.
God knows what teams will be produced.
Well, I think we have an idea with the U.S.
I don't know what Ireland are going to throw out there. We lost 2-0 to France yesterday, and it was a strange mix of new players coming in, old faces like Seamus Coleman, and a brand new goalkeeper. A League of Ireland player made his debut, got a run out for Ireland the first time in, I think, 11 years since that's happened. So I don't know what we're going to put up against you, but we'll still win.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll see. You're doing that, huh? You're doing that. And then Saturday night, 8 o'clock, Mexico and Scotland. Mexico drew with Wales 0-0.
Yeah.
They're still formulating their squad. They've dealt with some injuries that could change things. The Dos Santos brothers seem like they're getting closer to being able to perform.
In flashes last night, Tecatito looked like the Tecatito me and you are always obsessing over.
Yeah. Andres Guardado, they said they're going to give him, I think, every chance to prove his fitness, because obviously he's a player they would love to have.
Look, I know it wasn't a great game, but they look good at times, and they look like they have a bit of depth.
Yeah, we will, of course, keep a close eye on them. We'll speak, hopefully, with Tom Marshall when we get to our group preview.
Oh, yeah, because we're going to be the official pod of L3. Yeah.
And
what a reaction.
Yeah.
MLS, Saturday, 5 o'clock p.m., Portland Timbers and the L.A. Galaxy. Six straight wins now for Portland after they beat Colorado 3-2. Samuel Armenteros scored twice.
Good 2 weeks for him.
Yeah, he's got just three starts this season, but he's got three goals in his last two games. Meanwhile, Fernando Addy has just two goals this year. And I guess that means Portland has a good problem in that they have two guys at this position that they can choose between.
They need to start defending a bit better, though.
Perhaps, but look.
But actually, it's MLS. Don't. Just keep outscoring the opposition.
Well, here's the deal. They've played 11 games this season. Just four have been at home. And they've won six straight, coming off the horrible start that they had where they lost five. So I think, all in all, they took the scenic route to get here, but I think they got to feel pretty good about where they are. We're going to learn about them over the next several weeks, because here's what they've got coming up. The Galaxy, of course, this weekend, then Sporting Kansas City, then Atlanta, and then Seattle. So this is an interesting stretch for the Timbers. And then Sunday, 8:30, Sporting Kansas City and Minnesota United FC. Johnny Russell has been somebody we haven't really mentioned.
But we talked a bit about him.
Maybe a little.
He got a brilliant goal against LA Galaxy.
Yeah, but he's proven to be a very underrated signing for them, and I wanted to give him a shout-out. 5 goals, 3 assists this season. And he, by the way, in that aforementioned Mexico friendly, Johnny Russell earned a call-up for Scotland. So just 28 years old. Well, I don't know, just in his prime, but made 182 appearances for Derby County.
Yeah, it was a big move for him to come to MLS.
Yeah.
I think it's worked out so far.
He spoke about the change of scenery being a thing that was really necessary for him, and that has proven to be true. He has validated that with his performances for Sporting KC, and they've been really good so far this season. Bring it down the stretch now.
Red card.
Can I get mine first here?
Do it.
I referenced this earlier. JJ, I'm giving my red card to Jermaine Pennant, formerly of Liverpool.
I know why.
He tweeted this following Liverpool's Champions League final defeat. Quote, "Gutted for the players and fans, apart from the goalkeeper. I've been there. I feel their pain." Crying emojis.
Plus a picture of him in 2007.
Yeah, with his second place medal. Next season, then a strong emoji. And then hashtag YNWA, which of course stands for "You'll Never Walk Alone." What a terrible teammate to write something like that. That's really all I can say about it. I'm not a Liverpool supporter, but I'm going to sound like one for a moment. This is a club whose motto is "You'll Never Walk Alone."
Type that if you don't get it.
It's not just some fun song for the supporters to sing. I hope that it's more than that, that it's an actual credo for members of this club to live by. So to include that hashtag, YNWA, within the same tweet that you single out the goalkeeper is completely and totally backwards for what your club is supposed to represent. Jurgen Klopp has tried to build a feeling of togetherness and unity on this club, and for Jermaine Pennant to get it so painfully wrong here, it just goes to show how little he represents when it comes to Liverpool Football Club. And by the way, I'll go even beyond that. And this is a little bit of a shot at their current players. That game ended, and he sat by himself. Lars Karius was alone. And look, I don't know what he's like behind the scenes. Maybe he doesn't get along with players. Maybe they don't like him. Maybe there's more to it. But you know what? Somebody on that club should have recognized that this was the worst moment of this guy's professional career, and probably one of the worst moments of his life up to that point. Jordan Henderson, somebody should have gone over and put an arm around him in a moment where he desperately needed it. Instead, it was left to Real Madrid's players, who were the first to go over and console him. That just, look, maybe it was totally unintentional, but it didn't look right.
No, I can't.
Somebody should have stepped up and done something to help this guy in what was a horrible moment for him.
Karius did say afterwards that you know, the guys tried to cheer me up in the locker room. But you're right, they should have gone over straight away.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
What do you got?
Well, this is just really an update on a previous red card. The English tabloids' continuing weird obsession with Raheem Sterling stepped up a notch after Sterling got a tattoo, Andrew, which was visible at training and which the Sun went big on, questioning whether he should now be thrown out of the England camp for this tattoo. It's the tattoo of an M16 assault rifle, which... On social media, Raheem Sterling explained as his father was a victim of gun violence when he was 2. His father was shot, and that Raheem Sterling swore he would never hold a weapon, and that his weapon in his line of profession is his right foot. So that's why he got the weapon put on his leg. And this is just blown up with people like Piers Morgan getting involved, all the tabloids, talking heads all day on Sky Sports. Once again, we're looking at something Raheem Sterling's done, and the tabloids have gone huge on it. Now, I would advise people who don't follow this or don't follow their the aforementioned weird obsession with Raheem Sterling. Adam Keyworth, at Adam Keyworth on Twitter, has, how will I say, curated all the times and the many varying and bizarre and unnecessary reasons that the Sun newspaper and the Daily Mail and the Daily Star have gone after him. And this is just one in a long line of reasons for going after him. Look, in the current climate in America, would I get an M16 tattooed on my leg even for that reason that he's had? I wouldn't.
No, it's a bad optic.
But it's not my leg. That's the point. And he is a victim of gun violence. He's allowed to choose whatever he does with his body. But it's, again, there's something sinister at the heart of this obsession with Sterling. So please do the research on it. Read up on it right now. Try and avoid it on Twitter, because it's really got blown out of all proportion. So red card to the Sun.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
I'll go quickly here. I give mine to Eric Lehigh. American, of course. But I forgot to mention this last week, so I'll bring it up now. His goal for Nottingham Forest against Arsenal in the FA Cup was voted at the BBC as the FA Cup's goal of the season.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, I thought we'd go back and take this opportunity to relive it, as it was called on FS1.
Work from Cash. Not a bad ball in. And it's not away yet. Holding's header. Lehigh. He's going for another! Eric Lehigh scores two! And what about that second one?
Americans doing things in Europe. By the way, he was also named as Forest's Player of the Season. But he seemed like he fell out of favor there a little bit at the end of the season. Wasn't
still
playing quite as much. So he's been linked in some transfer rumors, most notably with Hull City. So we'll see what happens with him and his development. And of course, I should say, as we said earlier, it's nice to have Tim Ream, another American, back in the EPL.
Oh, you're feeling good about yourself now.
The road to Qatar has begun.
My people of the match are the people of the city of Kiev. Mm. I bumped into so many Liverpool fans who had just great stories to tell me about their trip to Kiev and how that trip was made possible even by the generosity of many people in Kiev. I met a family from Chorley, two brothers and their kids, who travelled over. Andrew, it was like a film, Trains, Planes and Automobiles, to try and get to where they needed to get to be. They even walked across the Polish border into Ukraine to get the next bus or whatever it was to connect them to where they needed to go. And they had a hotel, they had something set up, and it was, like we spoke last week, taken away from them by some scurrilous people. But there was generosity, and a woman in Kiev put them up in an apartment that she had, and for free, for nothing, so they could enjoy the city. That was just one example. They were so patient, they were so kind with this influx of foreigners into their city, and so welcoming. And I know it's not the easiest place to get to in the world. I know people would have concerns going there, but I would advise anyone to go and bask in the generosity of these people. Well done. You put on a great tournament, or put on a great tournament final, rather. And absolutely, the people of Kiev, my men and women of the match.
That's good stuff, man. Good stuff to them. Good stuff to you. This was very long. If you're still with us, you're the best. We'll have more podcasts this week as our group previews continue. C and D.
Andrew will demand that they are under 45 minutes.
Those will be. Those have been very nice and neat and tidy. These have just been gluttonous. And
thank you for all the feedback to them, and keep the feedback coming. And any comments you have about CRD, so we can put them in our group mailbag.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Should have said that earlier. But hey, our thanks to you. I'm glad that you seem like you're recovering. You're doing good.
I'm okay. This is what we sign up for, though, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Hey, to you I say,
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you later, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.